Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back. Episode 2, Season 9. I've even got it right this week. We're back to our kind of normal format this week. We've got Jack Bennion on my left. Hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson. I'm Ryan Champion.
I haven't done that bit yet. I'm not sure to say hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello, Jack Bennion and Tony Simpson. Well, Jack's just getting ahead of the game.
He's always ahead of the game, though, isn't he? He's always ahead of the game. It's the way Jack Bennion rolls.
He knows stuff like days before we do.
He knows stuff literally weeks, months, years. And that's why he works at MN. Isn't it, Jack?
if you say so, I disagree, but yeah, maybe.
Jack, do you feel quite kind of happy? There was a few things said on Twitter with regards to your references to Formula One in last week's programme, and obviously it was the British Grand Prix at the weekend and Lewis won. Do you kind of feel kind of vilified?
I don't want to say anything about F1 in case Niall Burns pipes up again and I have to upset him and make him feel a bit small.
It gathered a bit of pace.
It was simple to bed there, wasn't it? Yeah.
I wouldn't say it was quite hate mail that we received, Jack. I think that would be quite dramatic, but it definitely gathered a little bit of pace. Definitely. Anyway, there you go. Jack, we're kind of the week before. It's almost like Christmas Eve because we've got Rally Finland coming up next week. So I wouldn't say it was necessarily a slow news period, but boys have been out playing. Now, one question I wanted to put to you boys before we go any further, which kind of started on Twitter over the weekend. I think Callum Black and Jamie Edwards, of course, who've been on the programme before, with regards to Thierry Neuville doing the Autoglim Rally. And we were somewhat confused, and I don't know whether one of you two boys, I'll ask you first, Jack. Why was Thierry Neuville allowed to compete in a current spec 2017 World Card on a national rally?
I think there was some sort of dispensation given by the FIA to allow him to compete. That's my understanding anyway.
Okay. I don't need to come to you now, right?
No, I believe there was some dispensation given by the FIA. but you don't need me to say that.
No, I don't. It's like there's an echo in here, isn't there? Right, moving on, boys. We'll talk about that in a little bit later on. Anyway, Jack, we'll come to one of your headlines very, very early on. We're going to go junior structure planned to boost WRC talent pool.
Yeah, Jarmo Mahonen's putting together a plan to try and sort of give rallying a little bit of direction. I think a lot of this has gathered pace since Carlos Sainz made a few comments last week about how the rally and sort of progression ladder doesn't really link to racing. Obviously, Carlos Sainz's son is in Formula One. There we go. I've got Formula One into the podcast already. How good is that? His son's gone through the single seater progression ladder, and Carlos made a few comments about how rallying needs to be sort of similar. So that kind of ties into what Jarmo Mahonen has been doing over the past sort of. I guess this has been years in the planning, I suppose, is trying to get people to feed into their sort of regional championships. So he wants a ladder of progression from national and things like the British Rally Championship, for example, to feed into the European Championship, which then feeds into the World Championship. So I'm simultaneously very excited about this because the planning on paper sounds really good, but also a bit sceptical as a miserable old journalist that where's all the money going to come from and how's this going to be funded and those kind of questions haven't really been answered yet. But I think it's fair to say it's an exciting move that they actually want to change things and actually want to create some sort of career progression for some of these young drivers.
Right. I think we're all pretty much in agreement something probably does need to happen. But hasn't it technically always been the same? It's always been a lot of money to get into the World Rally Championship, whether obviously in the early days, people like, Colin McRae went over and did Sweden and Nova. That wasn't cheap to go and do something like that, relatively speaking. We've always had these costs, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. That's definitely true. But, one thing I would say is that, that they're actually looking at creating a specified career progression sort of ladder like racing has. So, although, yes, it's still going to cost money, if there's less championships and you've got a more sort of defined route to follow, then theoretically your money should go further and it should be easier to reach the top of the ladder if you've got the talent to do it. But I'm sure Ryan will have some comments on that.
I was just going to say, you sounded spookily like Ryan then, because I said, Ryan, surely this, and you answered.
Sorry, I didn't hear you say that. Sorry, I thought you were still talking
okay,
to me.
It's fine. Sorry, Ryan, go on, you were going to say.
I'm just checking. Can I go now? Is it my go?
Yes, it's your go. Just one thing before you do go. And I mean this with the greatest respect. The picture that that's used this week, Jack, for Yarmol Mernahan. I always struggle with that surname. I struggle with lots of surnames. There's a bit of a look there of he looks like he's doing stand up.
If you say so.
No, he does. He's got a look of anyway. It'll come to me. Sorry, Ryan. Go on.
Thanks for that, Tony.
Yeah.
Taking us down some garden path. I think two things. Anything that encourages career progression has got to be applauded, because it is a difficult sport in which to progress. But you're quite right. No, it's always been very difficult to make the move to world championship from British level. In fact, it's always been incredibly difficult. And, you know, most of the drivers that were lucky enough to do that, that became professional drivers, have done it with the help of a manufacturer along the way. So you talked about, you know, Colin McRae back in the day, or Richard Burns, or Alistair McRae, Mark Higgins with his outings on WRC. You know, they've all been with manufacturers that have helped them make that jump. Martin Rowe, you know, another one that springs to mind. It's incredibly difficult because the sums of money are so expensive. And ironically, we're probably in a better position now than we ever have been for drivers stepping up from a national level to WRC privately than ever before. With the, you know, firstly, we had the World Junior Championship, but that became very expensive. And then we saw the DMAT Drive Championship, and that's now become, obviously, you know, the Junior Championship, as it were. And I think that's worked well, because we haven't seen private drivers stepping up to WRC in the numbers that they are now ever before, really. You know, we've seen a whole host of British drivers get WRC experience through the DMAT Drive Championship, and to an extent the World Juniors before that. So I think certainly things are better than they've been, but anything that can be done to reduce the costs of that, then great, because obviously to do a year in the DMAT Juniors is, what, £150,000, let's say, as a round figure. There isn't many people with £150,000. So it's still all around money. It's still very difficult to achieve that. But I do think we're in a position where a lot more people are doing it than have done in the past.
Jack, if I can just ask you on this one, I'm going to ask Ryan the exact same question in a second, but I'll be interested to hear. The DMAC thing has been fantastic. Obviously, they've changed the prize structure of it this year. From the prize winners from last year, to get two rounds. Did you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it's a brilliant move, because, you know, just thought about someone, you know, spending, right, quote the figure, 150,000. I think it's quite a bit more than that to do DMAT Trophy, to be honest. But I think if you've got an opportunity, so if the prize was, let's go back the year. So the prize before was, if you won that championship, you won a year in an R5 car. But now we've got the you know, obviously rallying's difficult with people crashing out and difficult conditions, and lots of different things can really affect how you get on over the course of a rally. So with the new prize system, you've got more chance of winning a prize, and you're less affected by your car breaking down on every rally.
Can I just throw something out there, though, before Ryan jumps in and before you finish? I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, sorry.
Would you not agree that put a certain amount of pressure, for instance, on Ocean, on Rally Poland?
You've
only got two chances.
Yeah, no, it's true, but, you know, if he'd have won all the rounds last year, he'd have won he'd won more prizes, wouldn't he? So it's a difficult one to kind of summarise, isn't it, in that sense. But I think giving drivers more opportunities to overcome, because, for example, last year, Gus's season would have been over if the prize hadn't changed, because Gus had a lot of problems towards the start of the year and had a few issues, but he kept going towards the end of the year to try and win that last prize. So he would have not done the rest of that championship and gone and done something else instead, most likely, because he would have had nothing to win. He wouldn't have been able to win the championship. But because that prize structure had changed, he still had the opportunity to actually get into an R5 car and try and impress. And yes, it does create a lot of pressure, but any prize driver at any level is going to present a heavy amount of pressure, isn't it, for any young driver?
Should we ask somebody that's won prize crash?
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, not quite at that level, unfortunately. But no. I think there's an element of both in there, but it definitely ramps up the pressure. If you've only got two rallies to prove yourself, and as you know, I hope Osh isn't listening to this, feeling any more pressure. But as you said, he has two opportunities to prove himself. And, you know, the first one's now gone badly, so he's only got Finland left, which is a tough rally to really shine. I think part of me agrees with you, Tony, in that if you win a championship, you're the winner, and you should be rewarded for winning the championship, and therefore, you know, you should be the one to benefit, because with the current system, and I can see where Jack's coming from, it gives more people opportunities, which is great, but who was the winner of the championship? Are they remembered for winning the championship? Because actually, somebody who finished second or third in the championship might get more rallies. And you know, I think we should be rewarding the winner of the championship, because ultimately they did the best job over the year. But you know, yes, it's nice to give more opportunities to more drivers, but the less outings you have, the more pressure that you put on the riders inherently.
I think the other thing which I find quite interesting reading the report, Jack, is that they're already making reference to the fact that they want to go R2 in inverted commas light, which kind of fits perfectly with the R2 national car, which of course the excellent people at M Sports always seems to manage to be kind of ahead of the curve on these things. The R2 national car would kind of fit quite nicely into that.
Yeah, I guess that's what they're aiming at. And, you know, it's, as well as M Sports been proven to work in Germany in the Opel Adam sort of cup that they run there, and that's had a really good takeoff, and again is in well over double figures for this year with their car. So yeah, you know, it seems to be a format that seems to work, using like a sort of scaled back R2, if you like, and it seems to be something that the FIA are now properly looking into. But then you wonder, like, if you can have an R2 and an R2 light, and then an R2 light minus, and then an R2 light minus minus, and then where does the curve end?
No, absolutely. I tell you what I do find interesting, and I'll stick with you, Jack, and then I'll come to Ry, because he's kind of been kind of there or there about it at some point in British Rally Championship. But obviously they're talking about wanting this structure and using the likes of the British Rally Championship to feed into the European Rally Championship, and using this kind of R2-like category. You know, how many people who are going to do the British Rally Championship, for instance, would someone like Frederick Arlen, let's use him as an example, want to be in an R2 national car right now in the British Rally Championship?
Probably not, but I think, you know, Mahonan doesn't say that all domestic championships would have to be two-wheel drive. He just said that's what the blueprint should be. You know, whether the British Championship stays with R5 or does come back to two-wheel drive, if this all comes to fruition, I don't really know. But I think if you've got some domestic championships that are allowed R5s and some that aren't, then the whole point of creating sort of equality in the ladder up to a certain point is kind of ruined, isn't it? Because the British guys who run at the front of the BRC will be going into the RC with relevant R5 experience, whereas the guys who've won maybe, you know, your Spanish championship or your French championship have done it in a two-wheel drive car, and they've not got that relevant experience of the R5, so the ladder's instantly sort of not really fair, is it, at that point? So it'll be interesting to see how they decide which championships get which cars, and how sort of strict they are in terms of inventing which specification they go for each championship.
Right, I think that probably gives a definitive choice to the driver of whether they want to become that particular country's champion, or whether they want to be a career driver, doesn't it?
Yeah, but you know, let's from a national championship point of view. I mean, God, can you imagine the British Championship being for R2 light cars only?
Do you know what though? Let me put this out there, and there's a guy which Jack knows and I know quite well, and I know you know of him, right? A guy who's ran my car off and on for many, many years, and I've drove many of his cars, and he always maintains that if the World Championship was full of 1600 Ford Focuses, Sebastian Loeb still would have won all the championships.
He would,
because they'd all be in the same cars.
But nobody'd want to turn up and watch it.
No, I know, I'll have that, but by the same token, does it not breed the best drivers?
No. Just let's remember that rallying in this country is it's you know, it needs amateurs, it needs events to survive. And if you we tried a two wheel drive British Championship a few years ago with our three cars, and we got down to what, 15 cars a rally. that nobody particularly wanted to go and watch because they were all the same sort of car. And the British Championship, the rallies have to be exciting. They have to be interesting. You know, they have to at least generate some interest, not just from the people competing, but also people around that. And, you know, we've got back to some level of hype, some level of interest around the British Championship now. And I just think if we step back in terms of equipment, we'll just lose that again.
I think it's. I'm a bit like Jack. I'm kind of conflicted on this one. I'm excited because it's being addressed, but I'm kind of confused of how we can find this uniform blueprint across.
I think you can have a category. You know, have a category like we have now. You know, the junior part of the British Championship is exciting. It's interesting, but it doesn't have to be the number one category. I mean, like I said, go back to the previous question. Did the BRC work last time it was two-wheel drive only?
No. And in fairness, and I could see what, you know, the previous regime under Mark Taylor was trying to do. I think the choice to go front-wheel drive was brave. And again, I think we were at the point where technology, you know, Group M was becoming coming to an end. I think we all recognise that, you know, certainly with Subaru and Mitsubishi. And then there was nobody else really outside of that. And I think he just went with a front-wheel drive concept. And then the best front-wheel drive car out there was the DS3. It was like a mini-wheel rally car. And everyone went for that. And then obviously off the back of that, you know, Citroën Racing and Citroën Racing Ireland kind of went, well, that's going to be our one-make championship as well. So effectively, the BRC became a one-make championship. I think there was only one other R3 who, I can't think. He was in a Clio Mark, someone. Oh, I remember him having a really, really big off in it and ripping the front off it.
Mark Donnelly, I think.
There you go. Yeah. Thank you, yeah. And that was the only other R3 car out there other than all these DS3s. And I think they were a victim of the fact that Citroën produced such a good R3 car and there was only, you know, the only other option you had was the Clio.
Yeah, maybe. But people still didn't want to watch them. And a DS3 was quite a fast car comparatively to, you know, maybe an R2 light car. And like I said, I just think we need hype around the championship. We need excitement around the championship. You need a variation in cars around the championship. You know, we've talked ourselves about, wouldn't we like to see some 911s in the British Championship? Well, yeah, of course we would. And now we're talking about, you know, restricting the equipment even further. So for me, we need variation in the British Championship to survive as a strong national championship. The rallies in the BRC have to survive. You know, the organisers have to be able to organise rallies. You can't organise rallies around sort of 10, 15, 20 cars.
No, that's very true. But, you know, where's the cut-off point? Right, this is not a pop of the BRC as it stands at the moment, but you know, I can see Isle of Man not having a great deal of BRC cars there. So is it not better to have 15 lesser powered cars, or sorry, you know, 30 maybe lesser powered cars out there all competing with one another than 10 R5s?
I think you still, like I said, it comes back to being the pinnacle. The BRC should be something that you aspire to, and you know, it should be an exciting championship, and it should still be the highest level championship in this country. And I just don't see that with R2 cars or R2 light cars.
I agree with your point. Go on, sorry, Jack.
I was just gonna say. I mean, there's nothing to stop what you just said happening in terms of having 15 or 30 junior cars there. It just means they're not going to be running at the front. And the fact is, if you win the BRC, you win a trophy. If you win the junior BRC, you win £30,000 in cash. So there's incentive there to go and do the juniors. I think the main problem is that they probably, one of the main things is that they can't run together like they would in the ERC because of the seeding regulations. So they're all spread out across the length of the rally, and the last junior is coming in like four hours often after the first junior that's gone. So it's really difficult to try and make that work with how the seeding order is. But I think it's an easy solution. If you want to do what Mahonan says and you want to direct people into the regional championships like the ERC, you do what Rai said. You know, you've already got the junior championship. So the person who wins that junior championship goes into that regional championship. and you keep the R5s at the front or whatever, you know, if we get to 2019 and something's changed and we don't have R5s anymore, whatever the front running form there is, and the person who wins that isn't allowed to enter the ERC, or anyone who's done more than five rallies in an R5 isn't allowed to enter the ERC, because that's the place where the juniors are supposed to go and do their learning. And I think they're well within their right to stop people from doing that. And let's face it, if you're talking about the likes of, you know, some of the front running R5s we've got now, if they've got enough money to go and do an ERC event, then they've got enough money to go and do a couple of WRC events. So you're not actually going to rule them out of doing rallying. You know, they'll go and do their own events wherever they want to go and do them. It's just, you just stop them from doing the ERC and keep the ladder strict to juniors and R2 guys.
I suppose, as I say, that's why I said before, you've got a choice of being a career driver or trying to win your national kind of title, I suppose.
Yeah,
as well.
It's true. But if you switch the BRC to R2s, I think that's what Rai was trying to get at. You know, obviously it didn't work with the Citroens, but I think there was quite a few reasons for that. One of them being that the Citroen wasn't the most reliable car ever and not the easiest to drive for some people. But I think, you know, if you immediately switch to R2s at the front of field, you're just going to wipe out those sort of
inches
you've got at the front, aren't you? So
that's not what I was saying. What I was trying to do is give an example of maybe, you know, if championships, if we have more people out doing it, then surely it makes it more interesting.
I take on board
everything, and I agree with it wholeheartedly. I'm just trying to give it a different view and a different perspective, really. Sure. If we had 30 cars out fighting, is that not more exciting? And I completely and utterly get the fact that R5 cars are phenomenal and everything else, but if we're in a situation where that we comes to a time where we could be back in the realms of what we had with the DS3s, as an example, and we've gone down a rabbit hole here. I really didn't want to go down, but we could be in that situation very similar with R5 cars. What we have with DS3s, with very, very little else other than those R5 cars, and I think that's always going to be a danger. But we've kind of gone away from the path where I started this point from, to be honest with you, anyway.
This is the problem with, and we've talked about this previously, it's the problem with homologation, isn't it? It's the problem with the following the homologated route. Now, in terms of homologated cars, you either go R5 or R2, and there's nothing in between. And that's why, you know, we've talked at length about Group N cars, and we've talked quite a lot about AP4 cars, and you know, they've gone away and done something because they see a gap. But in Europe, we stick to homologation, and unfortunately, in homologated cars, all anybody wants, or the only cool things to have now, are an R5 or an R2 car with nothing in between.
Yeah, I think I think Jack alluded to it as well. I think everybody I know who had DS3s kind of, there was very few people who got on with them that well, and I think it was they were so complicated. They were so advanced at the time, and they're probably not quite as advanced now, but they were so advanced at the time as well. And obviously the Max kit made them a little bit unreliable, it has to be said, but you know, they had infinite suspension settings. You know, you could go. And there's a guy I know who was running one, and I won't name him but I remember him showing me a list of settings he was trying on a rally that we were doing together, and he had six other drivers' settings. And I said, what hope have you got in finding a happy medium? Because there were so many changes that they could be made, not only from a driver's settings, but also from the suspension settings actually on the car as well. So again, it was almost too advanced for its own good. And I completely agree with you, right? It almost like there does need to be something in between. As I say, we've got an interesting piece at the end of the podcast with Brendan Rees that we've already recorded about AP4 and what he's doing over there testing those. Anyway, boys, we got completely and utterly down a rabbit hole there that I wasn't planning on going down.
You started it.
Well, that's kind of how things set up. I kind of set them up, and then we see where we go with them.
It was your rabbit hole.
I haven't got a train set, and I haven't got a rabbit hole. Actually, yet I have. I've got a mole hole in my garden.
You coined both of those phrases yourself, so you can't say you haven't got them if you're the one who said it to start with.
You're the one who said it's my train set.
I think that might have actually been my fault.
I think that would have been your fault. We've got to be careful because this is irrelevant banter. Not everybody appreciates, boys. Always remember that.
Sorry to the people who don't appreciate it.
I'm not sorry. They shouldn't be listening to the podcast if they don't like our banter, should they?
That's it. Well said, Jack Bengen. Is it our podcast now? I noticed how it's become our podcast again in the space of 15 seconds.
You're lucky I didn't say my podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not far away, Jack. It's not far away. Hey, listen.
It's your train set, but you borrow our carriages.
You know what? That sounds like a really, really wrong euphemism of some sort, but still, there you go. Right, we shall move on. As I said at the top of the programme, obviously, we're kind of in this Christmas Eve thing of Rally Finland, and we've got Christian Solberg coming up a little bit later on, who's going to be with us this week and next week. Next week, he'll be talking about Rally Finland as well. Now, a couple of things. We talk about people getting giddy, and we talk about rally fans, and unfortunately, we've not had them on for a little while, various reasons, but hopefully we'll get them on again soon. Craig Breen. Jack Benyon. There's a lovely picture of Craig, and there was lots of things on Twitter and stuff like that. Obviously, we can only assume that his employers became a lot more relaxed due to the fact that it was a manufacturer that no longer technically really exists. And he was allowed to go and play in his dream car, which he's always gone on about to me whenever I've spoke to him, a Metro 604.
I think if anyone's ever spoke to Mr. Breen, and the first thing, well, not the first thing, but usually within a few minutes of conversation, the Metro 604 manages to come up, and he watched his dad drive him on as a kid, and used to love watching them compete in Ireland, and it's always been something quite close to him, I think, and finally got to drive a proper works 3-litre car at Kerbera Sprint Track earlier last week. So yeah, big opportunity for him to drive his kind of dream car, and it's nice to see a WRC driver getting properly excited about something. Not obviously the 604 is, you know, it's not a strange thing to be excited about, but it's a current WRC driver showing that he's connected with the history of the sport, which is always nice to see, and he clearly very much enjoyed his day.
I think it's that fan connection, isn't it, as well, isn't it? Because we've all got our favourite cars, haven't we, Ryan Champion? Some of us are lucky enough to own them. We've all got our favourite cars. I mean, obviously, we've seen, you know, Jari Matti out in Escort, and obviously in the Audi not so long ago. I'm sure he'll be out in a Toyota of some sort as well at some point. And I think fans kind of appreciate these guys actually being rally fans themselves, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. It's always. Sorry, did you say Ryan there? I've interrupted again, haven't I? Sorry.
I tell you what, he's keen this week, Ryan Champion, isn't he?
I just didn't hear you say Ryan. Sorry.
He's got a lot of words to get out this week, hasn't he? Clearly.
He has. Have you not spoken much this week, Jack?
No.
No, all right, there you go. He's up on his daily allocation. Sorry, Ryan Champion. That point was to you.
No, but it's fantastic to see drivers with a passion for the sport, isn't it? That's what rallying's all about for me. It's, you know, it's people who do love the whole sport. They love what they're involved in, and it's not just a job to them. It's not just wanting to be world champion and wanting to be the best. It's about enjoying the sport they're part of and enjoying the past. And certainly, you know, Craig is a massive rally fan at heart, as is Jari Matti, and you know, they're both drivers who will quite happily chat for an hour about X-Works cars and Group B cars, Group A cars, whatever it might be, and I'm sure that Craig will be following Jari Matti very soon with his own little collection. I'm sure once Craig gets a few pounds in his back pocket from his rallying career, he'll go out and buy something interesting, I'm very sure.
Are we allowed, and I suppose we should put this to Jack Benyon, we were talking about drivers driving other things, are we allowed to mention Sebastian Ogier?
Well, that's not really up to me, because I'm the one who's already talked about Formula 1 on this podcast already, and neither of you two have, so.
What do you think, right?
I think we probably can.
All right. Sebastian Ogier tried a Red Bull, not a can, an F1 car. I'm sure he has had a can of Red Bull. I know, all I've seen is some still pictures of this. I don't know times, I don't know where it happened or anything. So Jack Benyon, I know you're our F1 correspondent now. Tell us all about it.
Oh, brilliant. Thanks for completely dropping me on the spot there. OJ's favourite, I don't know if many people know this, but his boyhood hero was Ayrton Senna. So OJ has for a long time wanted to test the Formula 1 car. So now that he's free of any sort of manufacturer burden, obviously driving for M Sport now, he was allowed to go out and have a little blast around in a 2011 RB7 Red Bull. So I think he drove just over 50 laps, I think. 50 or 60 wow. laps from memory. And yeah, he seemed to enjoy awesome, I think it was the word he used when he got out of the car. So yeah, good to see.
Are we Are we a great distance away now from Ogier goes F1? Because we had the Sebastian Loeb tried one. You know,
Sebastian Loeb didn't just try one. Sebastian Loeb did get very close to competing in F1, didn't he? I think if it hadn't been for the super license regulation, he may have even been seen in one at one point. He did get very, very close.
Yeah. And of course, Colin tried one, you know, back in the day, the Jordan. I don't know how close he got to seriously competing, but apparently he was competitive. So the headline's got to come as Nick Jack. Am I going to be picking up?
Yeah, it's only a matter of time, isn't it? You know, he did a couple of Porsche Supercup races a few years ago and has obviously done this now. So, yeah, it's only a matter of time before the obvious Sebastian correlation happens and we get some sort of Ogier to F1 story.
Yeah. Did you see this little film that's being made, speaking of F1 and rallying and everything else, involving Robert Kubica? Any of you boys seen it?
I saw it advertised on social media, but I've not watched the trailer yet. I've not got around to doing it, but I do intend to.
I've watched the trailer. The trailer is really, you know, it's quite intense and, you know, pulls on the heartstrings and everything else, as you can imagine. Right, have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it. I'd be quite keen to see that, but I haven't seen that.
It's just probably a minute trailer, and it's these kind of screen grabs of leading up to, you know, early F1 days, and then obviously him in a rally car, and then the accidents, and then thereafter, and everything else. I don't know who's produced it. I've just very, very quickly seen it only the other day, and it looks fascinating. I think we all enjoy watching documentaries and stories and stuff, and we retweeted a documentary with no presenter the other week, which is the one that Rye, I think you commented on it, didn't you, Rye? Which is the who produced it? Right, who did that one that we tweeted out?
The long rally,
yeah.
The one that Ante, the Finnish gentleman, did.
That's him, yeah.
Brilliant piece
excellent.
Of footage.
Yeah, it's brilliant the way it's been put together and stuff like that. You know, we can all sit back and enjoy these things and watch these things. And I love motorsport documentaries of any form of motorsport. So genuinely, I'm fascinated to see what goes on. I hope it's not kind of been Hollywood kind of esque. I hope it is what it is, and I shall look forward to watching that anyway. So there you go. Anyway, boys, we're at that point of any other business, believe it or not. So Jack Benyon,
you want me to go ahead?
Yeah, that's why, you know, to be honest with you, Jack, you haven't needed me to
that's
tell
how
you
it
that.
Works.
Yeah, you just normally jump straight in now.
I've done it so wrong this week that I thought I'd better ask and make sure. I don't know if this is actually out yet, but Mads Osberg is doing rally something that Tony Simpson can't pronounce, which is coming up in a few weeks. It's the next round of the ERC, the Polish event. Let's have a go then, shall we? Rally Zezowski.
Zezowski, that's it.
Yeah. I think we're almost there anyway. Yeah. Which is next month, just the first weekend of August. And Mads has signed up to compete with some of the ERC guys there. I think it's gonna be really interesting because Mads has been
a co-driver as well.
It's going to be with Patrick Barth, who co-drives for Oscar Solberg and the BRC. So it's going to be their first sort of outing together properly. And also, it's really kind of gone under the radar this year, but the Norwegian Championship's been very, 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 very strong with Mads there, Haven Brynildsen, Anders Grondahl, OC Baby, Frank Torrey Larsen. So there's been lots of...
Did you say OC Baby then?
OC Baby.
Okay.
Ole Christian Baby. Okay. And... yeah, a lot of, you know, he's obviously just won the last WRC2 round, so a lot of really strong talent competing in the Norwegian Championship this year, which has been good to see. But yeah, nice to see Mads sort of stepping out and doing some gravel in an R5 car. Not entirely sure what he's hoping to get out of it. I suppose it's just more seat time in the R5 for him, but yeah, it'd be interesting to see on that really super quick rally whether he can keep up with some of the ERC regulars and see how he gets on.
There you go, and that's Jack Benyon's early other business. Ryan Champion, have you got yours ready?
Well, mine just really follows up on what we talked about earlier with Christian Solberg, and this weekend at Shelsley Walsh is their classic nostalgia weekend, and last year it featured Group B cars, this year it's featuring Group A and World Rally cars. So you've got Christian there in the Mitsubishi World Rally car, and then there's a whole host of, like I say, Group A and World Rally cars, right from front wheel drive stuff through four wheel drive stuff as well. So that'll be a good weekend. And then just a mention of in a couple of weeks, there's a festival in Scotland, in Glasgow, that maybe hasn't been highly advertised in the rallying media anyway, but it's called Ignition Festival, and it's like I said, it's held in Glasgow. And the reasons we should be interested in it are because the lineup goes along the lines of Ari Vatanen, Marco Olen, Mikki Biasion, Timo Salonen, and Stig Blomqvist, all doing demos. So if you want
to go. There's a sentence that I don't think anybody had ever thought they put together.
But if you are north of the border, I would I'd be thinking about visiting that.
No, I think it sounds mega.
Italy's only world rally champion, Mikki Biasion, in Scotland. That's going to be something you can't really miss, isn't it?
Yeah.
How many pictures do you think they'll be forced to have with them trying haggis?
Well, that's probably better than the deep fried Mars bar, isn't it?
It is. And we, by the way, our Scottish listeners, we mean that with the greatest love and respect.
Absolutely. And one other thing, I was just looking at the Rally Finland website early today, and you know, we talked about this this idea of the WRC trophy. Do you remember that? You know, let's create a championship for 16 specs and earlier World Rally cars that fits in between R5 and the 17 cars, and watch them come and do it.
Yeah.
Or not. So, yeah, there's the two cars in the WRC trophy in Rally Finland.
And who are they?
One's Gorban in the Mini, which I think he's done most of the championship in the, in the Pro Drive Mini, and then Jean-Michel Roux in a DS3.
There you go. My only other business this week, boys, is I'm finally doing the prize draw for our copy of Dirt 4 to give away to one of our listeners. So, boys, I've got a list of names in front of me, and I'm going to close my eyes, and this is how it's going to work. You're going to tell me when to stop.
Who is?
Well, it's got to be Jack Benyon, hasn't it? Because he normally pipes up now at any given prop moment. So, Jack Benyon, you tell me when to stop, and we will stop. Anytime soon, Jack, because this is crap podcasting when there's just silence.
Stop.
It's Bertie Redfern.
Oh, brilliant.
There you go, Bertie.
Well,
congratulations.
Done, Bertie. I'm pleased with that. Well done, Bertie.
Sorry to Sam Jacks, Andy Wakeman, Scott Newman, Robert Walton, Rian Calder, Martin Davis, well, I can't even read my own handwriting, and the various other people that they were all people who've got involved via Patreon and we really do appreciate it. It does all help. So, Bertie Redfern, we will be dropping you a message, and you will be getting a copy of Dirt 4 from us. There you go, boys. That's it for the top part of the programme, where we've discussed basically junior rallying and train sets and how Jack Benyon likes to jump in when there's a gap. Which is fine. Michael McIntyre, I was trying to think of before, by the way.
I blame your poor presenting skills for not introducing the next person correctly. That's what I blame.
Well, no, I know who the next person is. That's fine.
Yeah, but we need to know who the next person is as well, because it's kind of important as to who answers the question.
Do you know when I say, so what's your thoughts on this, Ray?
I don't think you've been that clear this week, to be honest.
I think I have. Jack, it's just that you're pent up. Go out, get some fresh air, go for a walk, go and talk to a young girl.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah. Folks, we're going to go to a little break, and we're going to come back with Christian Solberg. But Jack will be back with us same time, same place next week.
Maybe. If I've got
over my
dose of prima donna.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We'll contact your people, see what we can put together. Ryan and myself will be back with Christian Solberg shortly. And thanks, folks. Speak to you a bit.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Click motorsportauctions.com. Now, one of the world's leading motorsport online classified adverts and auction sites. It's easy to use, providing listing platforms that enable you to sell race and rally cars, surplus parts, transporters, clothing, workshop, and pit equipment. We specialize in cataloging, listing, and selling large quantities of motorsport-related surplus and obsolete stock. Click motorsportauctions.com. This is Absolute Rally.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally. And welcome for the first time, and I always say this, hopefully not the last time, Christian Solberg. Welcome to Absolute Rally.
Thank you. Nice to be here for the first time, and hopefully not the last time.
It won't be. We've mentioned you. It's weird. I was thinking about this when I was thinking about trying to get you on, and you've been kind of mentioned in our program for the last 2 years at different points. The first time, of course, was the Mitsubishi World Rally program, which Ryan also was shaking cars down and things like that, and you came up in conversation. Then obviously Gus has been on quite a bit, and you've been looking after Gus, which I'm going to talk to you about in a minute. But what we really want to talk to you about is first and foremost your career, which is still ongoing. We've met briefly before when you were doing some British Rallycross. I was presenting the TV programs when you came and did some stuff with Albatech. How did the change to Rallycross first come about? Because it seems to be a natural progression these days for a lot of people in rallying. But what was your transition over to Rallycross?
Well, I think it's about, you know, I'm not a young boy anymore, and I still want to do racing, and rallying seems to be so difficult to find the budgets that is needed. And having been a works driver, it's not the first thing you want to do is to pay crazy amounts of money for a few rallies. And I wanted to try something new, and Albatech made a good package for these three events we did, and I really liked it. But unfortunately, Rallycross is also very expensive these days, so it's not easy to find a drive.
It's getting to those crazy heights now, isn't it? With World Rallycross and everything else. But if we can, before Ryan Champion, who's of course we've just been talking about before we started recording this, who's desperate to speak to you, albeit in a quite mischievous way. So I'm going to hand you over to Ryan Champion for a second, anyway.
Yeah.
Well, as Christian knows, I spoke to one of his former mechanics, Dom, about your time at Mitsubishi. But no, I just wondered. Obviously, you had a good opportunity with Mitsubishi, but it maybe came at an unfortunate time in the Mitsubishi team maybe wasn't in the best place. But how do you look back on the Mitsubishi days? You know, a great opportunity, but was it something that you hoped would go further?
Yeah, it was a great opportunity, and it was a dream come through in many ways. I was part of the team in many ways for already since 2000 or 2001, going to tests and rallies, some gravel work and some ice work, and just being on tests and seeing the glory years, seeing Tommy obviously winning the championships, winning the rallies, and the team was at its best. So to get a deal then midway through 2003 was a dream come true. Then happened with the team and with the car, it turned out to be a nightmare, really. So obviously there are good memories to have been a works driver, but obviously I was also looking for more years to go after the 2004 year, and I had a deal for 2005 and everything was looking fine, and then suddenly Pirelli came in and they basically sidelined me instead of Galli. So I was left without a seat at, let's say, November time 2004, when I was hoping to see a test. I had a calendar and everything ready, and then just things changed quite quickly. So
now the 04 car, ironically, you're going to be reunited with this weekend.
Mitsubishi, period.
I'm really
looking forward to it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to driving the car. The car itself then wasn't bad. It was obviously lots of work to be done, but I think there was just the cake was too big that the people who were in charge at that time, designing the car and leading the car, or the team, the cake was just too big. And we tried, if you start to develop the car end of, let's say, October time 2003, and the first rally is in January, it's not really the way to do it. So just was unlucky where I was, basically wrong time, wrong place. But still very happy to have had the chance to be a works driver. It's also, like I said, something to remember.
And like you said, it was very early in the development of that Mitsubishi. It was a brand new car for 2004, and obviously it did become better in later years. But it was a tough year for you, and I think probably one of the lows was going all the way to New Zealand.
Yeah, well, yeah, New Zealand is, I don't know, can you go any further than New Zealand to retire basically after the first Super Special? And what was really not funny, but the whole thing what happened there was we had this small alternator problem, and I think I can now talk about this, it's over 10 years. Small alternator problem already in tests, and the engineers didn't really believe the drivers that this could be the case. And I think the mechanics took the car from the garage to the ceremonial start. And the problem was there was a big traffic jam on the way, and they were like 2 hours it took them for the normal half an hour trip. And the problem was that the car, when it was idling, it was not charging the alternator. So both me and Panizzi, we basically, when we got the cars from the ceremonial start, the cars were running okay and then lost all the power. And we did the first stage like this, and then we went around, got to the time control. There was a waiting holding area for the next loop, and I shut everything down, went away for 10 minutes, and then I came back, putting the master switch on and putting ignition on, and then everything went blank, and my co-driver Kai came into the car and said, "What the beep did you do this time?" So, you know, I think the call you needed to make to Japan after Rally New Zealand, that we traveled all the way, you know, around the other side of the globe, and both cars retire within 50 meters of each other. So, not the phone call I would have wanted to make.
But then after that, the following year, actually, you had quite a wide experience of World Rally cars from an earlier Mitsubishi, the Step 2 car, but also then, you know, a relatively current Subaru and then in a Focus as well. So you drove quite a cross-section of World Rally cars from then.
Yeah, well, then I was again the privateer, and I needed to find the sponsors and find some backing to do some rallies. And basically, Mitsubishi gave me a car, the Step 2 car for Finnish Championship. That was sort of a maybe a golden handshake for that they had to pay me for 05, even though I didn't drive anything, and still they gave me a car for the Finnish Championship. But yeah, then I drove the Focus in few rallies and the Subaru with Atelier Kazas, which was a private team as well, but quite good private team. So yeah, obviously I was still dreaming of having a second chance to get a deal for some works team, but then the teams disappeared from the championship, and everything got more and more difficult.
You've still been constantly rallying, though. You've done a lot in Finland since then. So tell us a little bit about the years since the WRC.
Well, since 07, I did 08, 09, 010, I did Finnish Championship. I worked for Tommi Mäkinen Racing, driving and developing the Subarus. But again, 09, we did the whole championship. I think we finished fourth, crashed on the last rally because we were fighting for second place, and I was leading the rally and just made a small mistake on one corner, and that ended that season. And then 2010, we were doing okay in the winter time, and then just lost some backing and had to stop 2010 also, then in between winter and summertime. So yeah, after that I didn't do a lot, few tests on an R5 project and some development work with the tire brand. And then 2014, with help of Ken Rees and Pedro Salgrido, what's his name, who owned the half of the car, we managed to make a package for three rallies. And yeah, the first rally ended in Sweden with a problem or an issue that I really couldn't avoid. I just hit a rock online and broke the steering arm, because the conditions in Sweden were horrible at that year. So many cars had the same problem, and we were one of them. And then I did Estonia and Rally Finland, where I was in the same speed as Oitan, Jari Ketoma, after the first two stages, and then an unfortunate loose rock that I tried to avoid snapped the oil cooler pipe and broke the engine. So trying to save the car made bigger damage than just going straight and not trying to avoid anything. So yeah, not very lucky in my career.
No, definitely a little bit of bad luck there. But as we said, you're going to drive the 04 Mitsubishi this weekend at Shelsley Walsh. I'm guessing you've probably not been to Shelsley Walsh before.
No, I've actually been looking some video material that I can from the event, and it looks great.
It's a lovely event. I went for the first time last year. You'll not find it too complicated. You'll not find it as complicated as a stage.
Yeah, well, I was told, my friends sending me messages when they heard I'm doing the event, saying please try to stay between the tarmac road and not crash again. So the encouragement and the support I'm getting is not the best, but yeah, I know how they would just want to give me some hard time, and I'm just there to make a good show and have fun with the car. I actually even don't know how the event is going to run, so yeah, I'm waiting for Friday to be there.
It's a lot. Do you still fit into the race suit, Christine? Is that a fair question to ask?
I actually tried my old 10 years or the old 04 suit, and it was too big for me. So,
wow.
I think I'm heavier than I used to be, but I'm also more fit maybe than I used to be. So, yeah, I was even surprised myself that it was so easily fitted so easily.
Fair play to you. Yeah. Now, one thing I wanted to obviously ask you about, we've had Gus on numerous times, and Gus speaks really, really highly. And something which I think we lose in this country quite a bit, I think we don't use the mentoring thing. And you've become kind of, well, it is, you're Gus's mentor. Is this more of a Finnish attitude towards kind of coaching and things like that? Because I am always very, very shocked of how quickly drivers stop using mentors, stroke driver coaches and things like that. You know, every other sport, they have a constant coach. But for some reason in rallying, people seem to very quickly think they've got it kind of sussed, and they move on from it very, very quickly. Is this a Finnish attitude, or am I just reading too much into that?
I think you're reading too much into it, because this is fairly new in Finland as well, and I'm sort of the first coaches, or whatever you want to. Tapio Laukkanen is another professional coach in Finland who goes around the world doing these kind of things, and I think this is, I'm trying to make this more common in at least in Finland, but also in other countries, that the drivers would realize that the drivers who have been on a high level, who have seen it all, they can give you more than only teach you once or twice. Because it's obviously with Gus, it's now a year, soon a year in Germany. Since Germany, we have worked a year together, and obviously it's changing slowly towards more of mental coaching and tactics, and not needing to look about the driving and the notes so much. But I think also rallying is a sport where a coach or a mentor should be there for a mental support, and then also driving and setups and everything, because as long as the driver or the coach knows what he's doing, and the trust is both ways, then it works. But from the point someone thinks he is too good, that help is not needed, I think he's also lost a bit in his career.
I couldn't agree more. I think I am slightly biased, because I've got a great deal of time for Gus, and Craig is a very good friend of mine as well, his co-driver. And I just think he has come on so much in that period of time you've just said, and you know, obviously he's got good people around him. He's got yourself, he's got Craig, obviously he's within the M Sport family as well. But you know, surely that's got to be an example to everybody out there of, you know we've got somebody with some talent, we've gave them a direction, and they're being coached, you know, from every aspect of, you know, from the, you've just mentioned, you know, you're on your way to the gym now. Gus seems to be, you know, a constant kind of training machine when he's not in a rally car. You know, he is the quintessential, you know, perfect kind of specimen to go rallying these days.
Yeah, you know, since last year ended, when we really sort of pushed for this year, he realized that he needs to do a lot with himself, with his physical condition, and it's also helping his mental side, you know, because there is no shortcuts. Like I always try to tell him, that there's only one option, it's hard work, and then you get the price for the hard work you do in the gym and on other times, because when your mental when your physical condition is high enough, your mental side will also be strong during rallies, because if you're not physically top in top condition, you will start to lose your performance during the days or during the weekends, and that's something we want to try and avoid. And since he's really realized himself that it's helping him, he doesn't need to be told to go training. It's more that I need to try and tell him not to train every day and train so hard. But also the other thing is that what is now different to when I was a professional was that you can watch all the stages from onboards and look your notes to those onboards and make some small changes maybe. And when I was doing it, this was not possible. So this new generation has all the tools to really do the work before recce's if they really want to. And Gus is really putting effort into it, and it's showing quite good results.
If there was one thing you could say to our listeners, and we have listeners all over the world, and we have, you know, people who compete at various levels, what would be the one piece of advice you could give them?
Use internet.
Obviously for rallying, not for anything else.
Yeah, that could go the wrong way, that.
Use internet, send me email, and I can help you, but it's not free information, so.
That's fair too. We've all got to make a living. We've all got to make a living.
This is Absolute Rally. Case Notes Rally Magazine. Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports. From clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Case Notes Rally Magazine. Your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
And that's the final section of Absolute Rally. Apologies, we meant to have Brendan Reeves on at this section, and we kept him up really, really late, and he's probably expecting to hear his voice now. Unfortunately, we had loads of technical issues towards the end of the podcast, which included not having Brendan's voice, but having my voice, so it was a very bizarre conversation to listen to. So apologies, Brendo, we will get you back on, and yeah, let's keep everything crossed for Brendo, who's going to be out in the AP4 car in the not too distant future. And yeah, as soon as you start doing stuff, Brendo, I know you listen, let us know, we'll get you back on, I promise. And well done to Bertie Redfern on winning the Day 4 competition, and well done you, let us know how you get on with it. I'm still having a blast with Day 4, by the way, love it to bits. And yeah, folks, we really, really do appreciate the download, and I appreciate the people who are still downloading the old episodes as well. If you're new, welcome to the party. Please keep spreading the word. I can't stress that enough. People power and all that. But yeah, folks, we'll be back same time, same place in your podcast hole this time next week.